Welcome to Valley Voices. I'm your host, Amy Haddon Marsh. And my guests today are Suzanne Jackson. Uh-oh, we lost one. And Jeannie Perry on the phone somewhere. Can't get her on the line. Suzanne Jackson, welcome to the show.
good afternoon, Amy.
Hello, Jeannie Perry.
Hello.
Hello, good.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Jeannie.
We're just getting started. So these women are with Colorado Wild Public Lands, which is in Basalt. And it's considered a niche organization with a broad perspective. What does that mean, Suzanne?
So our broad perspective is that our mission is to preserve the integrity, size, and quality of wild public lands in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And our niche is working on land exchanges.
Okay, I get it. So mainly you guys are working on land exchanges. Can you talk about the beginnings before we get into land exchanges and some of the other things we're going to talk about today? Jeannie, can you talk about the beginnings of the organization?
Actually, I came on a little bit later. It started with Franz Frohlicher, Annie Rickenbaugh, and Hawk Greenway. And they were all on the Open Space Board together. And they, I think, started in 2005. Suzanne, does that sound right?
Was this around the Wexner Land Exchange? And
it was not the first. And the first one was the Bear Land Exchange.
Oh, okay.
And so they've been doing it all for a while. And then I came on board, I think, 5 years ago.
Right. And they actually were on the Pitkin County Open Space and Trails Board. And that's how they first mm-hmm. became acquainted with land exchanges. And like most people out there, they found it completely confusing. But after doing some analysis and research, they were interested to discover that the Bear Ranch Land Exchange and the Sooty Ranch Land Exchange were proposed concurrently, and they educated themselves about public to private land exchanges. Mm-hmm. And in 2014, they founded Colorado Wild Public Lands to continue that type of work.
Okay. So is there a problem with land exchanges, or is Colorado Wild Public Lands simply helping to educate people through the process?
Just to make sure it's transparent. Not all land exchanges are bad deals for the public, mm-hmm. but if they are, we want people to be aware and have the information.
Right, and some land exchanges are proposed by private entities, and they're trying to exchange and acquire land from a public entity like the BLM or the mm-hmm. Forest Service. Mm-hmm. And we work to make sure that the land exchange remains in the public interest.
Oh.
And so we engage community members, and we do technical analysis to go through all the environmental analysis documents and make sure, or do the best we can to make sure it's a fair deal for the public.
Well, if there is a land exchange happening from public lands to a private lands, how can the public still remain a part of that or using that land if it's going into private hands?
So what happens is that if a private entity wants to acquire public lands, they need to give back lands in return.
Okay.
And so then you try and make sure that the land appraisal values are equal, that mm-hmm. there's equal access opportunities, that they have similar ecological or wildlife values and so forth.
Is that possible? If you're to trade one piece of land for another and to have them have the same ecological values and all of that?
That's a good question, because what we've been finding lately is that they have different values, and sometimes it's like comparing apples to oranges.
Mm-hmm.
So the parcel being lost from the public to the private might have very good wildlife and hunting abilities,
mm-hmm.
and what's been given back in return is awesome land for recreation or mountain biking, but it's not the same thing.
Okay.
And that's one of the areas that we struggle with, and we mm-hmm. like to get people's opinions as to how they feel about that.
Are there ever any land exchanges that you really like that aren't a problem for the public? Jeannie, you want to weigh in on that?
I think that most of the public lands being in the western half of this country, it's something that we sort of take for granted living here,
mm-hmm.
and
I'll
people
say.
In the east don't really know that it's their land too.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as everyone's paying attention, if it's just a little swap of apples for apples, then we're not going to jump on them.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of one that was apples for oranges? Apples and oranges?
I think most of them are apples and oranges, and it's about weighing all the different benefits mm-hmm. and making sure that everybody weighs in. Mm-hmm. And that is why NEPA is so important.
And we are going to get to NEPA here shortly. But I want to just ask one more question about land exchanges. Why should people care about land exchanges?
There are a number of reasons they should care. Firstly, the importance of land exchanges is that it's publicly owned land mm-hmm. that's going to change hands. So the land that's being exchanged will no longer be accessible to the public. And there's certain examples where there's a sliver of public land between two private parcels. And that's mm-hmm. the only way to access all that public land beyond. If mm-hmm. you were to lose that to the adjacent private landowners, you wouldn't be able to get to your larger public lands. And that's just one reason.
Isn't that happening up at Philoa Meadows?
There is the Dorais Way issue up there. And yes, that would be a good example.
Okay. Do you want to talk about that for a minute? What's happening up there?
I could. Or Jeannie, are you familiar with that one?
No. I would say please go ahead.
Okay. So my understanding is that there is public access through Dorais Way, mm-hmm. but there are some private landowners on that road who are trying to stop the public from coming through. And I believe that Pitkin County is engaged in a lawsuit to make sure that the legal rights exist for the public to continue mm-hmm. and avoid being stopped by the private landowners.
That sounds like a kind of an example. It might not be a land exchange, but it sounds like a public right-of-way that's mm-hmm. that people are trying to shut down.
Exactly, yes.
Wow. That's can happen.
And it had something to do with the railroad. The land itself was owned by...
Oh, that's right. It used to be owned by the railroad. Oh, it sounds pretty convoluted. But, it's... you guys are currently raising awareness about another public lands threat that Jeannie just mentioned, NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, which is 50 years old this year. And to celebrate that milestone, the current Republican administration wants to basically gut the National Environmental Policy Act. I've talked to several people, including Peter Hart from Wilderness Workshop here in Carbondale, Jason O'Neill from the Western Values Project in Montana, Wild Horse advocate Ginger Catherines, and most recently Miles Traphagen, who's in the Valley this week talking about the impacts of the border wall in Arizona, New Mexico, on wildlife. And this is sort of shameless self-promotion, but I'm hoping that people will be able to listen to the interview or go to the event tonight at ACES in Aspen to listen about the construction of the border wall, because I think it's a prime example of what can happen without the protection of NEPA. Miles said that due to the Real ID Act, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, I believe, can waive NEPA as well as the Wilderness Act and other laws in order to build the border wall. That means no public input, no environmental studies, no impact studies have been done for the border wall. And it's amazing what's happening. But I'd like for you guys to talk about the importance of NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, on your work and what's at stake with these proposed revisions. Anybody?
I think that NEPA is everybody's tool. And I don't know why when I went to this hearing in Denver, mm-hmm. it was sort of like pick a team. And the people who were there to protest the changes, I mean, we had doctors, lawyers, school teachers, watchdoggers, Navajo Nation members, across the board. And then there was this pocket of Westernware folks, I like to call them.
Easy does it.
And I think they don't understand that NEPA is also their tool for everything they use public lands for. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's our voice. It's how we ensure that our representatives hear us.
Westernware people.
And I'm always the one in the room looking for the cowboy hats because I think I might be related to one of them or something. Uh-huh. And then they stand up and say, we need to change NEPA. And I'm like, oh, no, you guys. I don't think you read the whole
So you're saying that at the hearings in Denver earlier this month, that was the Council on Environmental Quality, which was hearing public input on these proposed revisions to the National Environmental Policy Act.
One of only two hearings in the whole country.
In the whole country.
One in Denver, one in D.C.
That's right. So everybody west of the Mississippi had to come to Denver, or they're still taking comments on it through March 10th. So you're saying that I don't know who you mean by the Western Wear people, but it impacts everybody from ranchers to recreationists to people, wild horses, everything. And how
everybody.
Will that be impacted? How will we be impacted by that?
Well, like you said, they're gutting it like a trout. We're just not going to be a part of the conversation anymore. And who said it, when you're invited to dinner, if there's not a chair for you, you're on the menu.
That's okay. A good one, Jeannie. Yeah, and, you know, specifically, NEPA requires proposed actions on federal land to be thoroughly analyzed and to allow the public to share their comments and concerns. And often the community adjacent to a proposed project are the ones who are the most knowledgeable about that area. So their voice is very important. Now the proposed changes are allowing a lot more projects to occur without thorough environmental analysis. They're not requiring you to look at alternative actions that might serve the same function but have less negative impacts. Mm-hmm. They're not requiring you to look at cumulative impacts, which are very important, because if you separate actions into small actions, mm-hmm. it doesn't look like it's such a big impact. But mm-hmm. when you look at it aggregated, it can be a very significant impact. And then most importantly, as Jeannie pointed out, people are losing opportunities to comment. And like she said, it's across the board. It's the same for everybody.
Right. And if it's, you know, if anybody's familiar, if you're out there listening to this and you're going, what the heck is NEPA? You might be familiar with the term environmental assessment, environmental impact statement, record of decision. There have been a lot of things. I do a lot of reporting on public lands, but the Thompson Divide is a perfect example, I think, of NEPA involvement. Was there not a lot of NEPA involvement in Thompson mm-hmm. Divide? Yes, no?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, there's okay. and a lot of public comment opportunity.
Right. And that's a key factor with these assessments, because the federal lands management agencies like the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, do these analyses, and then they're supposed to, according to NEPA, they're supposed to present them to the public for the public to weigh in. And then it goes back to the agency and they make a decision, and there's a whole process of protesting or whatever. But with these revisions, the room for public opportunity could shrink.
Yes, and they're trying to fast-track some of these processes and saying that they're inefficient. But part of the reason is that the government agencies are understaffed, or staff are being pulled off to work on something else like fight a fire. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of compounded projects, and it's not correct to take away from the thorough NEPA process that over the last 50 years has allowed us to have healthier living conditions, mm-hmm. cleaner air, less water pollution, preserve some of the environment. We don't want to lose all that for those kind of reasons.
And to keep it transparent. Can you talk a little bit more about the transparency? I could definitely, I don't know what the word is. I could definitely sort of take over this conversation, and I don't want to. But Jeannie, can you talk a little bit about how NEPA keeps things transparent?
Well, just like taking one of your favorite walks along the creek, and then all of a sudden there's a gate or a no trespassing sign, or, you know, mm-hmm. it could all happen without you even being aware until it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Right. You want
and
to go,
the wildlife. Yeah. I feel like we have, it's our duty mm-hmm. to protect them. And if we don't, then they don't have a voice at all.
That's right. And, you know, can you talk, before we go on, I want to let listeners know that you're listening to Valley Voices. It's 447 here on KDNK, and my guests today are Suzanne Jackson, staff of the local Colorado Wild Public Lands Group, and Jeannie Perry, who's on the board of directors of the group. Jeannie, you know, you mentioned testifying at the recent hearing in Denver. Can you talk a little bit more about your experience down there? The people that you were describing who were attending sounds Fascinating. How many?
It was fascinating. I'm country mouse, and then I get to the big city, and it's already a whole new perspective. But this was shocking. There were so many people from all different walks of life, and one gentleman came in with a red handprint on his face, which is representative of all the missing Indigenous women.
Right. Yeah.
Whose cases are never solved, and so he kind of just laid it out, and he didn't even use his whole 3 minutes. And he said, you know, the fact that you're calling this a public process, and that is the whole point of NEPA, is effing bullshit, because there's no process. They've given us 2 meetings, mm-hmm. and till March 10th to submit our comments, mm-hmm. and it's not transparent. It doesn't feel like they're really putting it out there for the public. It doesn't feel like they're advertising the fact that they want to hear from us.
So are we getting an example right here and now of what the truncated NEPA process would look like? I mean, we need a NEPA process on the NEPA revisions process.
I think the Council on Environmental Quality is sort of going through the motions, but I'm not convinced that they're actually listening.
What would convince you?
I think if they themselves were promoting submit your comments, you know, if they were putting it out, putting the word out and letting people, there was a lottery for the tickets. And so a lot of people who wanted to speak didn't get to.
How many people spoke, would you say? There were 3 hearings in morning, afternoon, and evening.
And I was in the evening session, and I'm going to say I was number 14, and there were probably 20 to 25 total in my session, and everyone had 3 minutes.
That's it? 25 people in the evening session? Do you know how many were in the... I mean, they didn't record this. They do have transcripts, but they didn't record it. So, yeah, any idea how many people were there for morning and afternoon sessions?
No. What? They didn't record it?
No, they didn't record it. I was in touch with...
I'm surprised.
Yeah, they have transcripts, but the transcripts aren't ready yet, according to the guy at the... in Washington, D.C., that I emailed today. But they will have transcripts at some point on the website. You said that the, Suzanne, you said that the comments could set the scene or lay the groundwork for future lawsuits. What do you mean by that?
Well, what we're thinking is that if the CEQ and the government go ahead and they implement the proposed changes, there are a lot of environmental groups who are submitting comments now and preparing themselves to fight this in court as an illegal action. And so also having a lot of people writing in their concerns and saying why they want to keep the regulations where they help will bolster the case for, yes, we need to protect NEPA.
And that's another good point, too, because I think when people are writing postcards or writing letters to the CEQ, that they really need to say a little bit more than don't change NEPA, right?
Yes. Well, it's always important to put your name and your address so they know who you are and they accept your comment. And then you can say don't change NEPA and then give at least one good mm-hmm. reason why. Mm-hmm. And they are, you know, that one of the things they're doing that makes it difficult for people is they're trying to require us to reference specific sections of the changes,
exactly.
which is very technical. And not many people have the time or the knowledge to do that. So I think as long as you say, for example, the proposed changes are going to limit public opportunities to share the concerns, mm-hmm. that's why I want to protect NEPA the way it is. That should at least give a good reason and move it forward.
Jeannie, anything to add?
I think just that without NEPA, you could miss out. There are so many alternatives and the range of impacts is so limited for future generations. I mean, if you don't include everybody, if you don't bring everyone to the table and see, you know, best case scenario, mm-hmm. then you're really limiting our future.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head, so to speak, when you said that, you know, you could be walking along a path and suddenly there's a fence, or you could be going to visit your favorite wild horse herd and suddenly they're not there, or a timber sale could occur and you didn't know about it until it started, or the border wall continues and there are no studies about the impacts on the jaguar and the bears and the blah blah. Again, a little shameless self-promotion. You can listen to KDNK. There are several interviews with Peter Hart of Wilderness Workshop, Jason Wild of Western Values Project, and then Miles Traphagen and Ginger Catherine's, and then this will go on the website as well. Could you tell listeners what, we have about 2 minutes left, what your website is?
So our website is called ColoradoWildPublicLands.org.
It's all one word, lowercase, ColoradoWildPublicLands.org. And there's more information about what you do and about the NEPA urgency. Jeannie, anything else to add in the last minute and a half?
Thank you, Amy. This was fun.
Well, thank you.
Getting the word out.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I will continue to have people on the radio talking about how NEPA is impacting them. I mean, now it's sort of a local, regional, a local, statewide, and regional thing with people that I've talked to. And I encourage listeners also to find out as much as you can. There's ColoradoWildPublicLands.org. There's Wilderness Workshop. There's the Western Values Project. And then you can go to the NEPA.org website, too, the official DC website, and find out more about the changes. You have until March 10th to...
The time is now.
The time is now. So Jeannie Perry, Suzanne Jackson of Colorado Wild Public Lands, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks, Amy.
Ciao.
You've been listening to Valley Voices. My guests today have been Suzanne Jackson and Jeannie Perry of Colorado Wild Public Lands. And we've been talking about the changes to the proposed revisions to the National Environmental Policy Act.